Coming up on this edition of the FitCast interview, I'm going to be talking with Brad Pilon on all things fasting. You can check out more information at thefitcast.com/Brad Pilon. With me right now is Brad Pilon. You can check out his website at eatstopeat.com. He's also got a great blog going on as well at bradpilon.com. Brad, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
And I did get your last name right. I know I got it wrong the first time we did an interview.
Yeah, I know. That was right on. Awesome. It's good.
I'm very proud of myself. And again, thanks for taking some time to talk to us. We had you on, and I couldn't believe it when I looked at it, but the last time I talked to you was like 3 years ago. It's been a long time. So I think it's about time to get you back on the show. We've been getting a lot of questions into our main show about fasting, because it seems, you know, you were definitely, you know, ahead of the game a couple of years ago, and now it seems like people are really starting to gravitate towards the whole idea of fasting.
It's getting pretty mainstream, eh? I think it's
it was even like popping up in the news. So that's when I'm like, you know, it really is starting to get to the point where it might be showing up on the cover of all the magazines that are showing up at the grocery store aisles and stuff like that. So, it is great to talk to you again. So I want to, get right into it so we can get to as much stuff as possible. But, let's take a step back before we even get into that and talk about what fasting is, just to give the audience an idea of how you like to set it up.
Oh, yeah. So my own little personal definition of what fasting is, to sort of divide it away from starving, is it's a purposeful abstinence from food, drink, or generally calories for a predetermined amount of time, right? So the things that make it different is it's purposeful, right? You've decided to do it, mm-hmm. and it's for a predetermined amount of time. And I like that in there, because what I don't want people to do is do the "I'm going to stop eating today and never eat again" type of mentality, right? Because mm-hmm. that's a lot like dieting. What that sets you up for is eventually you're going to fail, right? So if you're trying to see how long you can go for, there's always a point where then you're like, damn it, okay, I got to eat something. And you're sort of failing. Whereas if you do it for a predetermined amount of time, you got like 24 hours, then you don't fail, you win. I'm channeling my Charlie Sheen here, right? But it's all about winning, to the point where now it's a positive reinforcement of the habit. Right, so instead of dieting, where you're basically saying for the next 12 weeks, I just hope I don't mess up, to doing it for a predetermined amount of time, you have closure because you've ended it when you want to end it, hopefully. So then you don't have that feeling like kind of like I messed up and I got to start over again. It's a definite start, finish, and you did the whole thing on purpose. So that's kind of how I've learned to define fasting as it relates to sort of dieting and eat, stop, eat.
And let's relate to this. Let's go to a question from Joe. And he asks, are there strong reasons to support a 24-hour fast a couple times per week as opposed to the warrior diet / lean gain style of fasting for 16 to 20 hours each day?
Yeah. All right. So the main difference there is 24 hours once or twice a week is just more flexible by nature. So not more effective. In fact, just on paper, if you do the math, I mean, if you're doing 16 hours every single day, you're spending way more time per week in the fasted state than you would with just two 24-hour fasts. But what I'm looking for is something that is flexible enough that everybody can do it. So from the hardcore fitness competitor whose life revolves around being in shape, to the executive who is on the road constantly having lunch dates stuck in airports, where you need to be able to be flexible and move things around. Mm-hmm. So that's the main difference. Right? 24 hours itself was just picked because of the simplicity of remembering 24 over 22 or 28. If you started on one day at 4 p.m., you end the next day at 4 p.m. So it's nice and simple. But no magic to the number by any means, with the exception of just keeping it flexible and not doing it every day, allows you, again, that positive reinforcement, right? So if you're trying to fast every day and your kid's birthday comes up and you have some cake, you messed up, mm-hmm. right? Whereas if you're doing it 24 hours once or twice per week, you just move your fast the next day and you didn't actually mess up, you just postponed something. So a lot of it is the psychology and mentality, being able to diet, hate that word, eat optimally for long periods of time. For a lot of people who aren't doing a competition, it's not that simple. I'm going to dedicate my life to this for 10 weeks, get in crazy awesome shape, and just live with abs this summer. for a lot of people, this is a year or two process of going from, you know, I've let myself go, I'm 280 pounds, I need to get back to my university weight of 210. We're talking a year or two of dieting probably. So we have to keep it flexible enough that they're not going to fall off the wagon and just say, screw it, you know, I'm supposed to be 280 type of thing.
And again, this is not just a fat loss thing in terms of the benefits. There also are a lot of hormonal benefits as well that you talk about in your book.
Exactly. I want you basically to be able to fast once or twice a week for the next 20, 30 years, right? So that's kind of why I kept it that flexible, is for a lot of people, A, not only is it a great way to lose weight, but it's a phenomenal way to maintain your new weight, right? Because if you're chunking two full days worth of eating out of your week, it allows you a fair amount of flexibility, right? So you're not the dieting guy, you know, for the rest of your life who's at business meetings ordering skinless chicken breasts and brown rice type of thing. You're eating with everybody else and you're not sort of sticking out and being the oddball. It just allows you a bit more flexibility, which allows you to stay on this thing for a long period of time and hopefully reaping all the benefits, both health benefits and lifestyle benefits.
Very cool. One of the other things that we got a lot of questions about were, you know, lifting while on some kind of fasting regimen. And, yeah, you know, in the book, you definitely recommend lifting 2 to 3 times per week.
Yeah.
How do you like to structure those workouts? Do you like to go more of a full body approach, body part splits? How do you like to go?
Oh, okay. So my training is probably more weird and extreme than my eating. So in 2007, when I launched Eat Stop Eat, everybody thought I was completely nuts for recommending fasting. That's nothing compared to the way I train. So the way I train is I actually do an upper body, lower body split, but they're week long splits. So I will hit upper body for a week straight, and then I'll hit lower body for a week straight, and I'll just keep alternating back and forth. That's just something I found that works for me based on the amount of volume I need, but also the amount of rest I need, because I'm getting old and falling apart. But for most people, I don't really mind any. I don't mind body part splits. I don't mind upper body, lower body splits, and I don't mind full body. My main thing is, as long as you're getting in the gym, you're doing something right. From maintaining and building muscle mass while you're dieting, I mean, any one of those is going to help. One might be slightly more optimal than the other. But when it comes down to it, whichever one you're going to do for the next 3 to 4 months straight and that you're going to enjoy doing is the one I want you doing. So you can cut and paste between which one is 100% more optimal than the other. Well, the other ones are 90% great and 80% great. But the main thing is they're all good. Any form of resistance training is good. I just want you doing it. So don't really care. It's, a lot of it depends on the person's goals. So they're all good.
Now, what about training in the fasted state? Do you tend to like to get those workouts in, you know, while you're fed or when you're fasted? Does it matter?
I like fasted. To tell you the truth, what I've learned is that, one, I haven't really noticed a difference. I think that what you're doing is just with the whole post-workout, pre-workout stuff, if you're just sort of delaying it, mm-hmm. right? And most of us eat enough that there's nutrients in our bloodstream while we're training. And then, if you're going 20 hours, so you literally did your workout right at the beginning of the fast, well, that means you only ate 4 hours ago, so you still have the benefit of the pre-workout. So I think you're just delaying the post-workout meal more than you're missing it. I think there's a large difference there. I also think that if you're training consistently, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week even, at that point, every single meal you eat is both pre-workout and post-workout, so they're all equally important. What I found is that, you know, you can train during the fasted state, and sometimes you actually enjoy that more, right? And if you're having a more productive workout, if you're more focused, if you're sort of more dialed in, that's probably the most important part. So, like, I can deadlift fasted, and it's great. If I deadlift on a full stomach, it's not so good, right? So it's learning to kind of work with what works with you and probably really dependent on what type of exercise you're doing.
Though we also got, again, with the whole discussion on fasting, people want to always know what they can get in, what can they ingest, and the concept right. of, you know, supplementing with BCAAs comes up yep. a lot. Can you talk a little bit about what you kind of recommend for, BCAA supplementation during training and just, during the day when you're in that fasted state?
All right. Yeah. So I'm not sold on the research behind branched chain amino acids, the need for them in the fasted state. I'm going to stress the word need. Mm-hmm. I get the relationship, the acute short-term relationship between branched amino acids and protein synthesis. You know, I've designed supplements based on that whole premise back in the day. So it's nothing new to me. The research is fairly old and fairly consistent, but I just never seen it translate into any sort of measurable form of gain in muscle weight or size. That being said, I've never seen a single research paper showing that branched chain amino acids during a fast decrease your ability to build muscle, right? So I don't see a lot of evidence to support it, but I don't see any evidence whatsoever to say it's negative in any way. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if you want to take branched chain amino acids during a fast, I see no reason not to, especially since they're not overly expensive, they're not hard to take, that sort of thing. So I have no issues with them. I don't personally recommend them, but I don't care if you do them. I don't think you're ruining the fats or anything along those lines. The amount of branched chain amino acids you take would just depend on the research. I mean, you're really looking at anything between 3 grams and 10 grams. And then what you're taking, whether it's straight leucine or the full complement of BCAAs, or even if you've stepped it up to all the essential amino acids. But in reality, I don't think you're messing up your fast. I think the amount you take determines how often you want to take them during your fast. But really, I think it's more an insurance policy slash, you know, take some of the stress out of that feeling when you first start fasting of, man, what if I am losing muscle? It takes a while to kind of get used to the concept that you can fast for 24 hours and you're not losing muscle mass at some sort of drastic rate. So if a little bit of BCAAs make you feel better about it all, then go for it.
And, you know, continuing on the idea of, you know, supplementing, we got a question from Reese who talked about, you know, fish oils, superfood like greens products and multivitamins, you know, yes or no on those?
Yeah, so it completely depends on the calorie content and the purpose for why you're trying to take it during your fast. I mean, Eat Stop Eat is set up so that you're eating every single day, right? Because you spend the majority of your fast sleeping. Mm-hmm. We like to break it between 2 days. If you look back to the lean gains warrior approach of 16-hour fast every day, there's always a point in every single day where you've got a chance to eat. So I don't see the reason why you'd want to have your superfood or your fish oils or your multivitamin during your fast when you can just wait a couple hours and take it while you're eating again. So when in doubt, there's no urgency. There's no amazing special time of day to take your supplements. So if you can help it, why not just wait until you're eating and then take them then?
Gotcha. And again, I kind of want to take a step back and, you know, talk a little bit about the research, because you have been like knee deep in research. And one of the great things about your book and all the stuff that you do post is it is all heavily researched based. And, you know, could you talk a little bit about some of the recent studies that have been done on fasting? Has there been anything that's kind of really stood out, either, you know, supporting it or not?
The main stuff, I mean, a lot of the research was done, well, I mean, it's going on for a long time. The stuff I really like was early 2000s stuff. That's what really opened my eyes to the relationship between fasting and growth hormone. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the relationship between the elevated growth hormone during fasting and the preservation of muscle mass. So that was really good stuff, because that's what first opened my eyes to the fact of like, huh, maybe we're not losing a ton of muscle. Mm-hmm. Then after that research sort of came the whole, okay, well then let's look at how much body fat we're burning versus muscle. And that's what made me aware of, like, holy cow, okay, we're losing a lot of muscle. Now we've really turned to health markers. So we're looking at trying to find populations that have been fasting intermittently for long periods of time, and then comparing them to populations that haven't, and then trying to, through a technique called regression, sort of tease out maybe confounding things like whether or not one group smokes and the other group doesn't, et cetera, and see if we can't start to find some long-term health benefits to fasting. Now, it's always difficult to do that, because the benefit of fasting is obviously the loss of fat mass and the maintenance of a new sort of leaner weight. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to tease out the benefits of maintaining an ideal weight for long periods of time, as opposed to just going a couple days without eating here and again. But I think they're not mutually exclusive, right? So by using fasting and by maintaining, you know, a leaner body long term, what we're starting to find out is it's related to a whole host of improved, lowering the risk of a lot of diseases. And we're talking cardiovascular disease, we're talking diabetes, and a lot of inflammation-related diseases. So some of the newest research coming out is chronic inflammation, and it's going to be massive. The inflammation is going to grow into the type of size that antioxidants and oxidant stress became in the early 1990s. So in between now and next 5 years, we'll all be taking some sort of anti-inflammatory supplement, I'm sure. There'll be anti-inflammatory ads all over the TV. It's going to be that big. And with good cause. I mean, most of the time when a fad like that really catches on the diet, you know, dietary supplement area, it's because there was research to back it up and they've just blown it out of proportion. But chronic inflammation is something that's really going to start to get some light thrown on it as a, if not a cause, at least a very strong marker of a lot of disease states. And it's something that we can definitely lower through fasting and maintaining a lowered amount of body fat for long periods of time. So we're really going in that direction right now. We're going into the, okay, we've seen that it obviously helped people lose weight. We've seen that it also doesn't cause them to lose a lot of muscle. Now we're seeing it, what kind of long-term health benefits we can pull from doing it for long periods of time as opposed to just using it for short bursts to lose weight.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's getting pretty interesting.
You know, going on the fact of, you know, while you're in the fast, a lot of things that we keep getting questions about on the podcast is, you know, what's the best way to phrase this? Probably, you know, during the fast, what's the best way to keep energy levels up? I think that's one of the things that people are afraid of when it comes to fasting is, you know, like, oh, you know, if I don't eat for 2 or 3 hours, I feel like I'm going to die. You know, how do people adjust to that? And, you know, what recommendations do you give to your clients about that?
All right. First, the kind of the weird recommendation that it sounds really self-promoting, but I promise that's not the purpose, is I often find that people who have the worst time fasting are the ones who just kind of read about Eat Stop Eat, decide to try it out, and then email me. The people who always have a much better time fasting is the people who read the book first and then fasted. Now, it's not because there's some magic in the book. I think what it is that the people who are fasting without fully understanding what they're doing are a little stressed out and a little afraid of doing something bad or wrong, right? They're depriving their body of nutrients, or they're convinced they're going to feel lightheaded or their blood sugar is going to drop. And they create this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, right? When you go into something thinking it's going to suck, it's end up going to suck. So that's the one thing, is you just have to clear that out of your head and realize that, okay, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing something good. And that's actually a very big step for a lot of people, right? We spent the last 20 years in a eat every couple hours, time your meals type of environment. Right. To let go of all that and not think we're doing something bad is actually fairly difficult. The other thing is we got to realize that there's nothing overly special about your fasting day. So on any day you're not fasting, so I mean for all the people who've never fasted before, in any given month you're going to have days where you just feel awesome. And then there's days where you just do not want to get out of bed. They're horrible. You're thinking of calling in sick, but you don't. You go to work and it sucks even more. Right. So fasting's not going to get rid of that. You're going to have days where you're fasting and you're on top of the world and you feel amazing. There's going to be other days where you fast and you have a headache, right? The mistake most people make is that when they're having a great day, they give all the credit to the fast. But when they're having a horrible day, they blame the fast and say the fasting gave them a headache or that kind of thing.
It's amazing how you can track that, like on Twitter and Facebook too.
Oh, totally.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's the same thing with, I think it's just food in general. I mean, if we just sort of move away from fasting, if your kid or your has a stomach ache, or your wife or your buddy is like, oh, my stomach kills, the very first thing you ask him, you're like, oh, dude, what did you eat? Right. The very first thing. It's not like, oh, you know, do you have a stomach bug or something? It's always like, what did you eat?
Exactly.
They have a headache. What do you say? You're like, oh, did you eat something weird? Right. And then, or they come into work and like, ah, you know, I just don't have a lot of energy. Well, then you're like, well, you should eat something. Right. It's our default mode of sort of smothering and parenting people is they either ate the wrong thing or they didn't eat enough. Like it's always feed them, right? I think it's just a lot of it to kick back to that is learning to yourself that you don't need that. And especially when you first fast and you realize on your very first fast, you get that sort of weird feeling where you're like, huh, there's a whole lot of time I'm not spending thinking about food or preparing food or planning on going to get food. So some people realize that and like, this is amazing. I'm getting so much work done today. It's awesome. But other people sort of hit it and they're like, well, should I be thinking about food? Why aren't I thinking about food, right? Like maybe I should go shopping and prepare. Like it's hard to let go of letting food be your driving force throughout the day. And I mean, for anybody who has a typical day job or you're at a desk, you know, we can only really work for 10, let's just be really optimistic, say 20 minutes at a time. And if you're at a job where, you know, there's a firewall and you can't just go check Facebook, your only other option is to get up, go get a coffee, grab a tea, run out for a bite to eat, right? Like we use it constantly to sort of time mark our days. Every couple hours we do something that's related to food. And then so when you take fasting and throw that in the equation, man, when your daily habits are revolved around traveling for food or taking certain routes to work or home from work because you like that Starbucks as opposed to a different Starbucks and now you're not stopping there, it's a bit life-altering and it can kind of throw people for a loop until they get used to it.
Yeah, and just to quickly go back to, you know, the content that's in the book, we were talking a little bit before recording, and you know, the last time I checked out the book was back in 2008, and looking at it today is just unbelievable. There's like an extra 60 pages, and you do answer a lot of those questions when it comes to, you know, what do I do in case of this? What do I do in case of this? And, you know, it's so I was really blown away and just kind of I'm so thankful. The greatest invention, the iPad, just being able to kind of, you know, sit on the couch and read through that, you know, while watching the Bruins game.
Totally. It was a great game, by the way.
Yeah, I'm very happy about the Bruins have actually gotten their act together. These last couple of weeks. So, but yeah, no, like I said, I can totally, you know, back you up on that. So, you know, very interesting stuff. And again, I think this is a concept where, you know, people are still trying to, they still can't believe that it's doable just because, like you said, you brought up a great point just a couple minutes ago. You know, when our mothers ever saw us sick, it's like, oh, let me get you something. Can I get you something to eat? Like, you know, maybe that will make you feel better. And again, that's just the great thing about our society, or the horrible thing about how things have turned out when it comes to, you know, the marketing from the food, you know, the food companies and stuff like that.
We're recording this on a Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And tomorrow we're both dead meat if we don't buy chocolate and flowers for our mothers, right?
You have to.
So and it's everything revolves around food. I mean, bad day, chocolate. Good day, chocolate. Right? Like it's.
And you're gonna reward the good days too, right?
Exactly. And you get home and you know you're in trouble for something. Mm-hmm. Make dinner, right? Like head down, get in the kitchen, right? So, a lot of what we do is it totally revolves around food and removing that dependence on food to time your days, to plan your days, to separate your days into controllable chunks. For some people, that's really, really tough. Mm-hmm. And that's it's something I think we definitely have to work on. It's very eye-opening, too, if you pay attention to that during your fast. I mean, I used to talk, especially when the first version of Eat Stop Eat, you know, the main benefits of fasting were all the hormonal benefits. Now I'd say it's almost 50-50 between the hormonal benefits and sort of the life lesson. Those first couple fasts, when you pay attention to when you think you're hungry and why you think you're hungry, you learn a lot about why you eat. And it's always just habits, right? Just habits and cravings that you have to sort of realize are there and control. And especially when you figure out that, no offense to, you know, friends and family, but when you realize certain people are responsible for certain things, you know, that one coworker who always wants you to grab him or her a coffee on the way to work, so therefore you get one too. Yeah. You know, you just, all these things you realize, like, no wonder, you know, I think I eat about 2,000 calories a day. I eat about 4,000 because of X, Y, and Z. It helps so much. And on the days you're not fasting, you're much more in control of what you're eating.
Well, and I want to point to one thing that you actually threw up on Twitter. And, you know, that was this is actually from earlier today. And that's a quote that you put up. If the government is going to start trying to legislate against obesity, they should ban desk jobs. And that's, and I got to ask you about that. Is that something that's going on up north? Because there's been a lot of backlash here too about, you know, government trying to, you know, put anti-obesity stuff and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know what, to me, it's one of those weird things. I'm not an overly political person, but the exchange of money, you know, I don't see in terms of a junk food tax why if we're an obese nation, our government should get rewarded with extra money for that. But that's beside the point. I don't see taxing junk food as effective because, you know, taxing gas doesn't help. I still drive around. I bitch and whine about it more, but I still drive around. I don't think that taxing cigarettes necessarily helped as much as a very strong marketing campaign against the negative aspects of cigarettes helped. Mm-hmm. So if you want to tax something, you know, because I should be allowed to have any junk food I want, right? And so tax the – I made a comment to taxing pants with a certain waist size, right? So we all know that there's – your waist-to-height ratio is a phenomenal marker of long-term health. And to be healthy, you're looking at a a waist that's under 50% of your height in circumference. So I'm like, okay, well, if every man on earth is 6'8", that gives us a waist of 40 inches. So just to be conservative, let's say let's tax every pair of pants with a waist over 40 inches. You know? And then for women, I gave them 6 feet tall. That's a waist of 36, right? So that was kind of the comment I made. And then, typical when you post something even slightly political on your blog, I got the lashback that I didn't know what I was talking about, politics and taxes. But then someone made a really good point when he was like, you know, if the government wants to really step in, they should obliterate desk jobs. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing there is I totally agree, but I don't really think it's necessarily the inactivity of sitting. What I think it is more than that. It's anybody, I mean, I'm sure most people on this call work a desk job. It's that feeling of being trapped. So you get into work at 9, and I'm assuming you're in a typical office environment with, you know, your typical ego-powering managers, et cetera. You know, you can't just get up at 10, decide you're going to walk down and grab a coffee, right? Like you are trapped there and should be sitting at your desk until about noon, right? Mm-hmm. And then even at noon, you've got an hour, but you should really only take 40 minutes because you have to set a good example. And then you should stay not till 5, you know, heck no. But in a 9-to-5 job, you stay to 5:36 to prove that you're committed. And it's this feeling of being trapped constantly, not being allowed to just get up and leave the building if you want to, regardless of whether or not the project you're working on is done a week in advance. You know, it's better if you just sit there and check Facebook or read Brad Pelon's blog than actually get up and do something, because then that makes it obvious that you're not being productive. So it's a mindset that I think it drilled into us. But then when you get home, it sort of becomes it like you're not really effective unless you're sitting. All right. And so, I'm a big fan of not necessarily getting rid of the desk job, because, I mean, even you and I are sitting in front of computers right now. It's getting rid of the desk job mentality that once you start your day at 9, the more time sitting on your ass, the more productive you were. Get rid of that and get it to the point where you're just allowed to move around more. You know, if you turn the workplace into a bit more of a social environment, I mean, you can get some good steps into your day if you're just going around visiting people and going to different board rooms and switching things up on where you are. Mm-hmm. I was probably... most people were at their leanest in university. And if you went to classes, you were sitting for a fair amount of time, then you're just every hour walking from class to class and being active outside of it. So it's just that trapped mentality that I think we need to get rid of. And I think that would help a lot.
Great point. I need to ask, this is a funny story, but I remember seeing this a couple of years ago, but you and Craig did a diet versus exercise video. And, This popped up on a friend that I went to high school. He posted it, or he was talking about it on Facebook. And this is someone that is not into the fitness industry. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't read anything. Somehow he found it on YouTube, and he's like, holy crap, you know, it's a great video. And again, it shows you that you got to try to, you know, also watch what you eat. You can't just try to sprint till you die like Craig almost did.
Yes.
Is there any update on the fight with diet versus exercise? Does diet still win?
Yeah, diet still wins. I mean, in terms of exercise, I think in a large part we've grossly overestimated the calorie burn from the exercise, or underestimated the our ability to compensate by taking less steps or eating slightly more or something. There's just something missing there. And I think it's evident in gyms across North America. And you look at the gyms, and you could take the typical mentality, which is you sit there and you lambast all the people who are overweight but in the gym talking about how they don't try, you know, or they're not really lifting hard. But if you watch, I mean, there's an effort there. They are trying. And plus, if they're really overweight, I mean, it'd be like you and I throwing on a 50-pound vest and doing the same thing they were doing. Throw a 50-pound vest on a walk on a treadmill for an hour, you and I would be sweaty, mm-hmm. right? So they're doing work. Right, they're in the gym for an hour, and some of them are consistent. You know, you always make the joke about how I see the same people in the gym every single day, you know, but their bodies don't change because they're working out wrong. I don't think you're working out wrong. I just think the diet outside of it is wrong. And the really sad part is, you know, they're trying, because if they're in the gym, it's on their mind, which means they're coming home and they're doing their best to eat healthy, and they're probably eating healthy, just too much healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, so... They're probably spending their money on their organic meats. They're probably eating their Greek yogurt, which is awesome, by the way. I just tried it for the first time.
Oh, you know, man, you've been missing out.
I have been. Wow. I didn't realize the runny crap I've been eating compared to that. Ah, so good.
Dude, anyways, you just got to start playing away with the mixtures of what you can do with the Greek yogurt in combination of other stuff.
It's going to get nasty. But see, that's what I think most people are doing. But they're, you know, so their grocery bill went from $100 a week to $150 because they're buying all the right healthy foods now. They're just still eating way too much of it, mm-hmm. right? And then of course they start feeling like they're doing the wrong exercises, so they're going to switch it up. You know, they're going to go online, they're going to buy a couple different exercise programs, they're going to give it an effort, and then one of two things is going to happen, right? They're going to go extreme into that sort of really popular kill yourself every workout type of mentality. It's kind of popular right now, which lasts for about 2 months until, you know, someone who's overweight tries it, and then they've got typical injuries you'd see in a long distance runner, right? Yeah, they've got like chronic overuse injuries, and then they're not working out, and they're even worse. You know, or they get their diet in shape and realize that they didn't have to be killing themselves the whole time. But it is diet. It really, really is. And not only is it diet, but a lot of the time it's just calories. I mean, there is something to be said about improving the quality of food you eat. But for the vast majority of people in North America, that's kind of step three, right? Step one is just getting comfortable cutting down the amounts and learning new habits that don't revolve around eating for comfort, eating for indulgence, eating to sort of fix your mood, and then just eating because you don't even realize you're eating. You get rid of that, or at least lessen it and realize when you're doing it. Did massive improvements before they even step foot in the gym.
Yeah, and it's a discussion that we, you know, again, have had on the main show, where there still seems to be, you know, everyone's still looking for something to blame for why people are overweight, and
somebody, it's the constant looking for the bad guy thing that kills me.
And now it's fruit. Fruit's the latest bad guy.
Yeah, it's, I mean, which is not really the latest because it's cyclical.
Exactly. Yeah.
Have you ever read? I'm just looking at my wall of books here. Where is it? Mr. America. No. It's the story of Bernard McFadden, right? So we're going back to late 1800s and telling all the stories of him and the Kellogg's and the Fletcher guy, you know, the chew your food. Mm-hmm. And all the, I mean, they went from high protein to protein's the enemy, from high carbs to carbs the enemy, from high fat to fat the enemy. They went to, it's actually milk is the enemy, and you should be drinking raw milk. I mean, we've done this cycle for about a century now, right, of trying to figure out who the bad guy is, you know, and it's just, and we're getting better at making it sound way more scientific, yeah. right? By throwing in quote unquote new hormones, which is funny because they've been there forever, right? Just because we discovered them doesn't mean they all of a sudden appear in the body, right? There's nothing new to them. But we just keep trying to find the newest, latest Darth Vader of diet. And it's just not that simple, right? It's not this one problem. It's a bit of a lifestyle issue. Mm-hmm. And that's the main part we have to address, which is very kind of, you know, holistic and almost granola, but it's the truth, right? We're not going to find that one thing that fixes everything until we just sort of address it as a whole.
Very good. Well, before we do wrap things up, I got to ask you, is there anything that is coming down the line that people should keep an eye out for, either on the blog, you know, any seminars, anything like that people should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, most of what I do is instead of doing these sort of, you know, constantly reinvent the wheel type of thing, I just update. So you'll be seeing an updated how much protein soon, an updated eat stop eat soon, updated anabolic again soon, as well as the continuous work we do on with Adonis and Venus Index. Mm-hmm. And that one's really cool. What we're actually playing with right now is for those that don't know, it's basically an entire system based around the belief that there's a shape to health, right? And we work off of height, shoulder circumference, and waist circumference. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing right now is I've actually bought a pair of tree trunk calipers. So imagine a yardstick, you know, like the kind you got hit with in school, but with two-foot prongs, so I can measure widths now. And we're experimenting with measuring width and then trying to correlate that with different body looks and health markers. And the reason we're doing that is because the only problem with waist circumference is, and I know it's really, really awkward, but just about anybody who walks in my house, I eventually try to get a measuring tape around them, which is odd. And dude, the very first thing every guy does, and it doesn't matter if he's 300 pounds or 130, right? Sucks in their gut, right? And then when you tell them to relax, they half relax. And you tell them, come on, dude, relax. Then they flex their abs. I'm like, oh, man. So with a width measurement to see how variable that is and how much it changes with weight loss. Mm-hmm. And that may or may not, depending how that turns out, find its way into the kind of the Adonis Venus philosophy of comparing widths instead of to conferences. But it's constant trial and error with us, right? Seeing what the research has out there and then how it can be applied. So that's kind of along the lines of what goes on. But I just totally admitted that I measured people in my house, didn't I?
I was going to say, what do the relatives think of that?
Yeah, it gets
to kind of stay away from them.
Oh, or... well, it's like the first time the neighbors see you pulling a sled in the backyard.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out what I'm doing. And they're like, there's something you can attach to the back of your tractor that'll roll up the ground for you. I'm like, no, I'm actually working out.
How dare you exercise, you know?
Oh, totally, right? Yeah, so yeah, anything you do to be the weird guy.
So way to do it. Again, you can check out Brad's stuff at bradpilon.com. You can check out his blog there, as well as links for Eat Stop Eat and How Much Protein are on the website there as well. He also has, again, if you're on the Twitter, you can check him out on Twitter as well. And same thing on Facebook. There's links for those on his main website as well. So Brad, again, thank you for spending some time on your Saturday as the weather starts to warm up and
yep.
We can actually go outside and get away from our computers for a little bit.
Very true.
And man, I'd definitely love to have you on again down the road, maybe hopefully not in another 3 years.
Yeah, we'll try to do it a bit closer together than that.
Yeah, and hopefully we can again get some great questions from our audience. Hopefully they'll check out the book, you know, give fasting a chance and you know, actually read through some of the literature out there. And you know, it's again, it is eye-opening if you really read through some of this stuff. It is very interesting, and you know, maybe it might be a new way for a lot of people out there to you know, stick to what they're doing and continue to live a healthy lifestyle.
Yep. Everybody's goal out there is to check out fasting before Oprah starts talking about it, because the minute she starts talking about it, it's over.
Yeah, it's man, she's crazy, but she yep. He's got more money than all of us put together. But again, Brad, thank you so much. Everyone check out his website, bradpilon.com. We'll be back next week with another interview. So if you'll stick around for that, check us out on iTunes, thefitcast.com, all that good stuff. Thanks for joining us. And again, Brad,
thank you. Thank you.
This week's podcast features music by Anaminaguchi and MHV. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.